There are over 75 million monthly Tubi viewers. That's more people than there are influencers on the internet. Which means Tubi is more popular than sponsored posts for digestive enzymes and high coverage foundation. More popular than soft launching your boyfriend. More popular than making boomers explode with rage when you tell them how much you make on a single post. Tubi, it's more popular than influencers. See you in there.
Every Stearns & Foster mattress is handcrafted with the finest materials for irresistible comfort every single night. Now, save up to $800 on select adjustable mattress sets only at stearnsandfoster.com. Lesser savings may apply.
We're back! We're back! It's a distraction. I'm Drew. That's Roth. How you doing, Roth? You got some World Cup fever?
I guess I do. I guess I'm a little worried about whether or not it's going to come home.
I believe it can come back to the house.
True. Yes, I am actually enjoying it. Like, I'm experiencing the full, you know, like, idiotic brain wipe between games. Like, I don't know these dudes and I don't know what they do. But when I'm watching them run around, I'm like, ah, look at them go. So that's good. About the most I can hope for.
My someone's younger son, he was homesick yesterday while I was watching Iran and the U.S. And when Pulisic scored his great goal, where he, you know, he sacrificed his dick and balls for the greater good of America. I jumped. I was like, woohoo! Like, I do this during football games too, and scared the ever-loving shit out of him. And he was like, I was not ready for that. And I was like, bitch, you know what you got into. I'm watching sports. You know the deal, man.
He's sometimes like, oh. You got to call your son bitch.
I did not call my son a bitch.
So wait, was he, I don't want to make you, violate your son's HIPAA rights. Was he actually sick? Because it's a pretty slick move to be like, I don't know if I can go to school today, the day of the U.S. men's national team game that starts during the school day.
No, because this is the son that doesn't give a fuck about soccer, so he was actually sick. Speaking of sick, we got a pretty sick guest. It's Tom Lay, our editor-in-chief at Defector. Hello, Tom Lay.
Hello. Excited to be your sick guest for the day.
That's signature Tom Lay caffeinated energy that he brings to
incredibly tight and sick.
I don't know why I get yelled at for this, and Roth does it. We're the same energy level.
That's true. We did an episode together during one of the ones that Drew missed, and it was just me and Tom muttering about baseball while Meg Rowley was like waited for us to shut up.
For sure, our strongest episode ever. I would bet
many,
on it.
Many are saying this.
It was like a low concert, just very subtle. Like it rocked.
You could hear someone getting a text during the
We should talk seriously about the World Cup, although not too seriously, because Roth and I know Dick. Thankfully, Tom knows a little bit more. Roth and Lay, really Lay, the U.S. men's national team is on to the knockout round of the World Cup. They advanced in the knockout stage only twice in their history. The first time they did so was in 1930 when they made the semifinals, and that was the literal first World Cup. Only other time they did it was in 2002 when they made it to the quarterfinals. Can this team, Tom Lay, be the third U.S. men's national team to actually win a game in the knockout round? Can they beat the Netherlands?
Yes. Yeah. I think it's very much they will be the underdogs and not be favored for a lot of good reasons. But the Netherlands are a great team, but they haven't looked particularly great at this World Cup. Like they've not been scoring a ton of goals or creating a ton of chances. And
I don't know any other team like that. I really don't.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's the thing. Like, I think there's no reason to believe we can't play as well against the Netherlands as we did against England. England is better. And then after that, it just comes down to like, does some shit break our way this time? You know, like there's a lot of different permutations of that England game where we could have come out winning. So it could happen. Like, I don't think there's any reason to go into it being like, there's no fucking point in watching this, whatever, we're going to lose 4-0. It'll be a competitive game. It'll definitely be good, I think.
Can I ask an idiot's question about this?
Yeah.
So that, as far as I can tell watching it, like, the team looks more like a proper World Cup soccer team than any Team USA team that I can remember, or U.S. men's national team. It also seems like the defense is far more advanced than the offense is. Like, is there obviously, I'm assuming that Pulisic, that his balls will have been extracted from his abdominal cavity in time for the game on Saturday. Like, how do you solve a problem like your team doesn't have guys who can score goals?
Yeah, this is sort of a pretty common thing if you follow club soccer with any regularity. Like, the process to becoming a good team starts, you know, with having solid defense, a coherent tactical plan, like players who can actually execute that tactical plan. And then the last and hardest step is like consistently scoring goals. Like, that is the thing that takes a team from, oh, these guys are pretty good, to like, this team rules and can kick anybody's ass, is you just need guys who can score a lot of goals, which is why like goal scoring players are the most important and most expensive in the world. And so like, with the US team in particular, it's like our strikers are, you know, probably the weakest point on the team. And this is just kind of how it's going to be. Like, that's not, it's not a problem that can really be solved in the short or even like medium term, like tactically. Like, I think that the way the team is set up, the philosophy they're playing with, the way that the players are functioning in the system is all pretty much been like A minus stuff. You just need a guy or two out there who was better at kicking the ball into the net when the chances come to them. And we just don't really have those guys, which is fine.
Do you not consider Christian Pulisic one of those guys? Is he more of a facilitator?
Yeah, I mean, he is best as a facilitator, even in his runs with Chelsea and with Dortmund when he was like doing really well. He was never really known as like a lethal finisher, like a guy who you can just sort of count on for a goal every game. So like, the goals we're going to score, if we score any in the Netherlands game, will probably look like the one we got against Iran, where it's like this really good team move, a lot of stuff happening, and then it's just like you've got a guy in the right place at the right time. We don't have,
right,
you know, the striker who's going to get the ball at their feet 30 yards, turn, like send a guy to the floor, and then like curl one into the corner. Like, we just don't really have those dudes, which is fine. Like, nobody has those dudes. Like, very few people have those dudes. So this, the way the team is playing right now is like, yeah, it's the same way a lot of teams in Spain and England play when they're sort of getting themselves to a point where they feel like they can be actually good, and they just need like those one or two more players who can really provide, you know, whatever you want to call it, the finishing punch or clinical edge or whatever the hell, you know, soccer commentators like to call scoring goals.
Is clinical edge, that's a soccer.
Yeah, they like to talk about how you need to be clinical in the final third or in front of goal. So like, like, and you, it, it's a dumb cliche, but you kind of get it. Like, if you watch enough teams like the US has been playing where they have the ball a lot in the opponent's half and they're doing a lot of passes and they make a cross and just like nothing happens, you want to be like, oh, you got to be more clinical in that situation. Like, you got to make a better final pass.
Yeah, the cross where nothing happens is just fucking,
it's not clinical. You have to be more clinical.
Like, I will say that as a soccer dumbass too, that like, that's been the part, like all of what you were saying was very lucid, made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
But it's frustrating because it's like, you'll see guys doing cool things and then it's just like right up until the last moment. And then the thing you have to hope for is that it bonks off someone's head.
Right.
Like, maybe while they're not looking, and goes in the right direction, because the rest of it, it's like, everything happens except for the last 5
Yeah,
seconds,
that is,
and that's very frustrating.
That is what the experience of watching a good but non-dominant soccer team just is. Like, that's just how it goes. You're just going to be frustrated because they do so much cool stuff that makes sense, and you're like, yes, they're really flowing, and then they just like can't do that final thing. And the teams that can do it, like, the cool stuff just lasts like a beat or two longer, and then all of a sudden there's a wide open goal and a guy's just tapping it in.
You get primed for it by like, you know, like by like John Strong or something, like, who I think has been very good. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, when that cross comes, that crosses it to the middle, and you're like, oh, here it comes. And then it just like, then the ball just lands, or like the goalkeeper catches it, and you're like, you fucking asshole.
Yeah.
Like, don't, how dare
My
you?
My favorite dumb soccer thing is something that's like a bunch of really cool passes happening nearish the net. Like, I know that I can like start edging towards the front of the, you know, couch pillow there. And then a dude just booms the ball directly into the air, like just straight up at a cloud. And I know that soccer is really hard, but there's a part of me where I was like, I would simply not do that. I would kick it at the net.
Yeah,
there was a game. It was either the Wales game or the England game where Weston McKennie had two good had the goal in his sights twice and fucking skied the shit out of the ball. And that, I just wanted to die.
The thing I always try to tell myself in those situations when that happens is that the ball is moving a lot faster than you think. And it looks on television, and the spaces are much tighter than they look on television. So like, but like that Matt Kenny chance, I know the one you're talking about, he was just standing in front of the goal, ball comes to him, and he just deflects it like over, you know, the top of the crossbar. And like on TV, it looks like, how do you not put that in the net? But, and it's very frustrating, but I just, every time I see that, I'm like, if that ball was coming at me, I would have just cried. Like I wouldn't have even been able to like put my foot on it. Like there's just no way that happens.
Audible peal of like no from the pitch as you try to do your thing.
I got two more World Cup questions for you, Tom. The first one is about our coach Greg Berhalter.
Greg, two G's.
Is he good? I've heard a lot complaining about his substitutions, particularly his unwillingness to play Gio Reyna.
Yeah,
is he making the right decisions or not?
I think he's been good in the World. Like I think in the qualifications, there was a lot of concern just in his selections, in that he liked to start guys who play in MLS and other bullshit, not good leagues. So far in the World Cup, I think his team selections have been really good. The Gio Reyna thing is like, I'm not as fired up about that as a lot of other people are, just because to me, like, what matters for soccer specifically for your manager is less about like, not so much the in-game stuff, but how they set up the starting 11. And like, when you watch them play, is it clear that they've got like a plan in place and that the players on the field are capable of executing that plan? And I think that's happened in every single game so far. Like I've watched a lot of soccer games for my shitty team that I like where it's just like 90 minutes of they're just not fucking doing anything out there. And you can tell like they don't have a tactical like philosophy of like how they want to play. And the guys trying to do it, if they do have one, are just incapable of doing it. And the US has not looked like that. I think in all three games for, you know, large portions, probably the majority of the portions of them, they've been, or at least looked like the better team on the field. So once you get that down, then I think it just comes down to like, okay, what's the actual talent ceiling of the guys on the field? And I think we've hit, you know, what our ceiling is, which is we can do a lot of cool stuff and defend, but it's just scoring goals is difficult. And like, that's not something he can really control. And soccer is not really a game where you can just like, oh, I'll just throw Gio Reyna on there and he'll go get a goal. Like it's just so dependent on a lot of other things. So I've been happy with him. Like, I think, there are a lot of other national teams that have looked a lot worse with a lot better players. And they just probably don't have as coherent as a system or whatever, or guys who has bought into it. So I think he's been good. I'm happy with him.
I think my only concern has been, and it was particularly true in the back half of the Iran game, where it seemed like we were playing to sit on a lead. And like, you know, I know from American football, that's always a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
I don't,
would you say it prevents you from winning?
It does prevent you from winning. I was similarly frustrated by that. My mild defense of the way that game ended is that like, there are some things about a soccer game that like, you just kind of can't prevent the way that it goes sometimes. Like sometimes it's just the natural course of it. Like if you're the better team and you get that first goal, if you don't get the second goal by like, you know, the 65th or 70th minute, just like the natural flow of the game kind of just demands that you have ended up kind of defending with your pants on fire for the last 10 minutes. And that sounds, I realize it sounds kind of stupid to say that. And you just be like, well, just don't do that. Like keep playing the way you were playing. But it's just like the demands being made on each team as time ticks down, just change when the score stays 1-0. And that kind of like, in a lot of ways, you just kind of can't prevent that. The way you prevent that is by like being good enough to score two goals in the first half, which we almost were, or being good enough to score one, you know, right at the start of the second half, which we almost did. But once you don't do that, it's like, to me, it's not so much of a referendum on their performance if the game ends the way it did. 'Cause that's just kind of how soccer games go in those situations.
I also forget Roth because of the temperature here and because I'm watching these games are taking place really nighttime in Qatar. I'm forgetting that they're playing on a field that is as hot as the surface of fucking Mercury. So, yeah, they're probably going to wear out a little bit and have a tough time scoring goals.
Yeah, and I mean, Yunus Musa, you could see at the end of that game, basically couldn't move. And also, like, our subs fucking suck. Like, every sub you put on for the U.S. team makes the team, like, 10% worse just because, well, aside from, like, Aronson and Reyna, but, like, anytime you put one of those MLS guys on, it's like, okay, we've gotten, like, significantly worse at that spot, which, I mean, I get it. You do it because guys are tired and you need fresh legs out there, but those fresh legs also kind of stink at soccer. So.
Are attached to some just booty-ass soccer. Yeah. So. Sometimes it's like that. I'm assuming that that's more like that can be said of all but, you know, whatever, three or four teams in the field, probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's the part where I, you know, again, so much of my understanding of this is like filtered through what I don't know. And I see a lot of people complaining about substitutions like on Twitter and stuff like that. And I always feel like that has aspects of that sort of like over-determined, over-performance that American soccer fans will sometimes do in spaces like that, where they want to sort of like signal that they're not full of shit, that they have this expertise. But the way that that comes out is by like complaining and saying that various people are like trash, nightmare, awfulness, and like
and I
don't want to like I should be like calling out names here just being like that's you I'm talking about you Scott but like there are like obviously limits to you know like what any team could do. It's just hard to was in the work Slack when they did kind of like pack it in yesterday and try to prevent a goal from, and it's like everybody explained to me very clearly why they were doing that. It didn't make it any more fun to watch.
Yeah.
It was fucking excruciating. I hated it.
Yeah. Like, I think, yeah, it is excruciating. And I think it's just like the only way that stuff gets easier to watch is if you just sort of try to accept or remind yourself that like in soccer specifically, you're just like players are just way more at the mercy of like the flow of the game than in other sports. Like it just happens. Like that's just kind of how it goes. And like, you know, if he subs in Gio Reyna at the 60th minute, like, do we get another goal? And, you know, then it's over. Like, I don't know. I think that when I personally complain about some soccer asshole not making the right subs, it's usually because what you're watching on the field, like, clearly isn't working. You're like, these guys can't, you know, get a pass into the opponent box to save their lives. Like, why isn't there a different winger out there? I haven't really just gotten that feeling from watching us. Like, everything that I've watched, I've been like, yeah, they're doing what they want to do, what they hope to do. And the stuff that's gone wrong is like, that's just sort of how the game goes when you don't, you know, finish it off early.
Well, as an American, I just like to say to that idea, fuck that. I think we should play tempo.
Yeah.
That's what we should do. I was definitely yesterday, like, you know, between like work Slack and like Twitter, I definitely, I saw a lot of, you know, dissatisfaction with the men's, you know, this sucks and stuff. And I was like, they're winning, they won, fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, I was just happy that they won. Yeah. I want to ask you, though, if they keep winning, and it really, this goes beyond just the U.S. men's team. Do you believe that people will put a spiritual asterisk on this tournament because of the time of year it's being played, because of the injuries, because of the heat, because of the attrition that a lot of these nations have suffered, which has reduced, I think it objectively has reduced the quality of play compared to other World Cups, Tom.
Yeah, I think I've had a tough time figuring that out yet. Like, I think we'll probably see more of that as the tournament goes on, and we'll see if, like, stamina really becomes a problem for people. I don't know, though. I feel like this is actually something that will go in the other direction, where the domestic seasons will end up with asterisks on them because these guys are going to come back all fucked up. Like, going into the tournament actually isn't that different from if it was the summer, because when it's a summer tournament, like, your league season ends in May, you get a little bit of a break, then you're doing World Cup by June. So it's like that level of freshness is sort of similar. But yeah, the big problem here will be when these guys come back, teams that are like in title races are going to have guys who are injured or tired or fucked up. And I think that's where the asterisks will go. I mean, it's definitely going to get, I don't know. I think so far it's been fine, but things could get a little wonky as the games go on and guys are getting more tired and, you know, yeah. But I think asterisk wise, like, it'll reflect more on the club seasons than this actual tournament.
That's interesting. All right, let's take a break. We'll come right back with Tom Lay of Defector. We'll be right back after this.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
We're back with Tom Lay, our editor-in-chief of Defector. We talked about soccer, now we have to talk about real football.
Hell yeah.
Tom, do you still, like, cheer for the Denver Broncos? And if so, why?
Okay, so when I saw this segment on the little rundown you sent me, I was very excited because we finally get to address out in the open the fact that we've worked together for like 10 years and every single football season, this comes up where you're like, hey man, do you like the Broncos? And I'm always like, no, I don't like the Broncos. Have never rooted for the Broncos. Never been a Broncos
fan. Oh, Bedford.
Yes,
Patrick. Yeah, Patrick.
But this is my favorite recurring bit that we have where like the Broncos will do something terrible and you'll be like, oh, Tom, look at your team. And I'm like, don't like them.
You're from Denver though.
I am from Denver. Yes. In your defense,
you murdered JonBenet Ramsey. Yeah. Like, you have all the local ties. Like,
yeah. I mean, I get why it happens. Like, I root for the Nuggets, the Rockies, every other Denver team. So yeah, the answer to your question is no, I don't root for the Broncos. Which
thank God for that.
Yeah. Well, previously in my life, that was a deadly mistake because they were like winning the Super Bowl when I was like 12.
Yeah,
I did not get to join in on any of that fun.
Had you adopted some other team just out of because you like their
no? I my mother was a Raiders fan, I think, to spite her own parents who were Broncos fans. And then so when she was raising me and my brother, she was like, you know, the Broncos are clowns, and we were like, yeah. And then like I honestly ended up growing up as one of those really annoying, just like NFL fans. Like I could have worn the Rob Lowe NFL hat. NFL, like, I fucking loved NFL football, but
all football is good.
Yeah. But I had no team or rooting interest ever. Which sucked. Cause then I wanted to be a principled young man. So when the Broncos were like winning Super Bowls, I was always like, no, I'm not happy about this. This isn't for me.
You didn't like, hop on the bandwagon.
I did not. I never did once. And like kids at school freaking out, wearing their jerseys, going on and on about what a great team we had. And I would just be like, no, I don't agree with that. Like,
I'm sure that Olandis Gary is very good, yeah, but unfortunately he is not mine.
Right? Yeah.
Well, I still wanted to use Broncos chat to.
Yeah, we can talk segue. Broncos.
Yeah, well, I wanted to actually talk about one and done coaches because I think that Nathaniel Hackett and Lovie Smith are our two best bets to be one and done coaches in the NFL this year.
Respectfully, I disagree. I don't think you can get rid of Hackett yet.
I kind of don't.
He's still learning so much. Like, how time works.
I kind of think they won't. But like the Raiders already said they're keeping Josh McDaniels, which is hilarious. And with that leaves, I think, Lovie and Hackett as the primary culprits. But I just wanted to let you guys know, I wanted to do a quick, brief moment of remembering some one-and-done coaches because it's a great list of names. There have been 29 of them in league history. There have been 15 of them in this century alone. Are you ready for the list, Roth?
Oh, my God, dude. Like, more than anything.
All right. So here, your first one is Marty Schottenheimer, which you don't think of as a one-and-done coach, but, of course, the Washington tenure, He's hired by Dan Snyder, who brought in Dion, and he brought in Bruce Smith and all. It's just a total shit. And Jeff George is a total shit show. And he got canned after one season, despite starting 0-5 and then going 8-8.
Oh.
Your next one.
Did they bring back Gibbs after that? Was that like one of the resuscitating Joe Gibbs?
I don't think Joe Gibbs 2.0 was right after that. Like right after that was like Norv or something like that. I can't remember. And then Art Shell, again, another sort of, because he had already coached the Raiders in the past, like in the 1980s or in the 1990s. And then Al Davis brought him back for 1 year and then fired him again. And then
that was my favorite of these. I'm not going to talk after all of them, but the Shell one was so good because it was like absolute terminal stage Al Davis, just like absolutely feeling it and doing whatever.
Yeah.
Shell hadn't coached in like 15 years. I remember their offensive coordinator that they brought back was like running a B&B in like the Pacific Northwest.
Shit,
like,
just, man.
Some guy.
That was great.
Handing him Carson Palmer and Randy Moss and being like, you look like this would be something you'd enjoy, right? Because you've been making eggs for tourists for 5 years.
And now, Lay, we get really into the list of guys.
Yeah, let's do some guys.
Your next one is Cam Cameron of the Dolphins. 1-15 and got shit-faced. Then the next one is Bobby Petrino, which is like, you got Petrino and you got Schottenheimer. Those are two like really just fantastic one-and-done seasons. And another one is coming up down the list. We also have Jim Mora Jr. With the Seahawks. We have Hugh Jackson with the Raiders, not with the Browns. The Browns kept him for two seasons so that he could win a grand total of one game in two seasons. Yeah. Then we're back in retread land. We have Mike Mularkey with the Jaguars in 2012. He had already coached, I believe, the Bills. And then poor Rob Chudzinski. He got the gate after just 1 year with the Browns in 2013. Yeah. And then the immortal Jim Tom Sula with the Niners. So the Niners in 2015 and 2016, they had back-to-back one-and-done coaches. So they started with Tom Sula, and then they had Chip Kelly.
Oh, my God. Wow, I forgot about that.
Like, oh, like this is a disaster. This coal pulverizer guy that we hired. We better get the guy who urine tested every Eagle and got himself run out of town for banishing Taco Tuesday. He'll be great. He fucked up. 2018, the Cardinals hired Steve Wilks and then fired him right away for Cliff Kingsbury, who like is now a provably worse coach because Steve Wilks is like winning with a DOA Carolina Panthers team.
Yeah.
And
he won a game in which Sam Darnold not only started, but rolled on his tummy into the end zone like a kid in gym class, in like second grade gym class doing a log
run. That was good stuff.
He scored a touchdown that way for him.
Things happen, you know? Like I some people were like laughing at Islet, and I was like, he just remembered no one had touched him, so he could go score.
He did the right thing. It was just funny to see like a big boy like just doing a log roll during a football game before someone blew a whistle.
You got three more. You got Freddie Kitchens, the immortal Freddie Kitchens. And then of course last year gifted us two. One was David Culley, who got shit canned by the Texans merely for doing his job. And then Urban Meyer, who I think probably it's either Urban or Bobby Petrino, who are the most entertaining fiascos of these one and dones.
Yeah.
I can't really decide which, Tom.
I think Urban is more entertaining. I don't know. Bobby's stuff was like just a little more dark, I guess. Urban is just more fun to laugh at. I'm struck by, this seems to be like a trend that's picked up recently. Like, I mean, there just seems to be a lot more of this now than in decades past. And like, I wonder what that's about. Like, I don't get the sense that owners care that much more about winning now than they did. Or there's just like, everybody wants the next Sean McVay, I guess. And they're just like super eager to get rid of people and find that guy. I don't know.
It's easy marketing.
The Texans one is the most confusing to me. Because that's like, if they really fire Lovie Smith, you can't say that Lovie Smith is doing a much worse job than David Culley. And I think David Culley did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
They're just like, what are they even fucking trying to do? How would you know if the coach was doing a bad job?
Yeah, I guess maybe you give them a roster. They just do it because then they get to make a cool Twitter clip of boss reporting for work. Or like, you know, big man's first day on the job. And like Drew said, that's good marketing. Sell season tickets. Yeah. If there wasn't Twitter, all these coaches would not be fired. They'd all have their jobs for at least 3 years.
Rivers McCown, who writes for Football Outsiders, has been, I think, more or less against his will on the Texans beat this season, and he's really done a good and thorough job of just how shitty they are, because they had Davis Mills a quarterback. They finally benched him this week, but like Davis Mills is really fucking bad. And Lovey, despite being lovable, I didn't mean that as a pun.
No.
It's actually done a worse job than Cully did a year ago. And ultimately, all of it lies not at the feet of Jack Easterby, who was already phased out of power probably as far away as like a year and a half ago. But Nick Caserio, who is now like the undisputed general manager of that team and has just been fucking terrible and has been terrible despite the fact that they traded Deshaun Watson away, who they will play against this weekend, for a host of picks, but they have absolutely nothing to show for it, despite getting all of those picks. So they're just a colossally badly run football organization at the top. You know, it's a typical fish rots from the head type bullshit.
Yeah. And so you can also say, I mean, like, Davis Mills is pretty bad. He is also, like, quite clearly not just the best quarterback on that roster, but the most promising. I think his backup is, like, Kyle Allen or something like that. It's like...
It was Kyle Allen. Like,
absolutely known quantities. I guess this is part of being the Texans coach, but there was a lot of... I probably also saw this on Rivers' Twitter account, because I followed him back from when he wrote for us at Vice, and he's always good. But he has to spend a lot of time watching press conferences where Lovie Smith is expressing not just tonally, but like textually, where he's like, I don't know what else. All right, sure, we're going to do it. We'll see what Kyle gives us. That'll be neat for everybody to do that. And it's like, everyone seems so unhappy. There's nothing you can really do to make anything better until those picks start showing up, if they are actually worth, you know, playing. It's just like there's some purgatorial NFL teams. I think the Texans have always been different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right from the inception, when they were like, we're the Texans, you're like, oh, you're not a real team.
Like, whatever's going on with the Raiders is at least, like, it started getting interesting now, because it seems like it's like McDaniels is there to shave points. Like, if you just gave the ball to Josh Jacobs, like, 30 times a game, like, that would be kind of annoying. He's going to be a free agent. You don't want to burn him out. They just won't do that. And so, like, the things that are working there, like, Jacobs is great. If they throw the ball to Devontae Adams, he is great. And yet, like, McDaniels' plan is just, like, there's three flea flickers per game. The question is where you put them. Like, he's just doing the fucking most all the time.
Yeah, it's true. And the other thing that Rivers noted in those Lovie press conferences is how clear it is from both Lovie's sound bites and his body languages that the decisions he's making are not really his, that he is being ordered.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's worked in baseball for, like, you know, the Moneyball A's and stuff, when it's the GM issuing orders to basically the coaching staff. But in football, that's really just never that good of an idea. Like, go look at the Colts. Like, you know, the Colts started Sam Ellinger because that's what Jim Irsay wanted. And that didn't work out all that good. I want to move on.
It's like Moneyball if, like, you're doing it with, like, the current Royals. Like, if you, like, get a message from your boss and it's like, Hunter Dozier's your leadoff hitter, you'd just be like, whatever, dude. All right, sure. Like, that's what you think is best.
Well, so much of it is, like, is teams thinking, okay, let's just do the Moneyball thing. Like, they think that the process itself just magically works. Whereas, like, the reason the A's succeeded with that was because they had a genuinely smart man in that position doing the Moneyball shit. Whereas if you have, like, just any asshole doing it, if you have a fucking dime store preacher doing it with Jack Easterby, that's not going to fucking work.
I do this all the time. It's the one Simpsons metaphor that I think I've humped to death the most vigorously, but I'm going to do it again one last time, which is during the robot parade at Itchy and Scratchy Land. There's a moment where Marge is complaining about how dangerous it looks, and someone from the park goes, no, these are very sophisticated robots, and one of them just takes the top of its head off, and you can see the circuitry inside. And, you know, Marge says to Homer, you see, Homer, all that stuff in there? That's why your robot didn't work. And to me, there's, like, everybody has been building Homer Simpson robots in this mode in sports everywhere, where you just build the outside of it and then you expect it to, like, come to life and make you a sandwich. And that's not how it fucking works, dude. Like, you need a lot of stuff in there.
That's like when I was a kid and I wanted to smoke a cigarette. So I rolled up a piece of paper, just a piece of paper. And I lit it on fire and I smoked it because that's what I thought a cigarette was.
Yeah, that was probably good.
And I almost burned my fingers. I was like, whoa, that's not good.
Yeah. That's cool. That's like, that's what most people are like when you see him smoking. Like if you see Barry vaping, he's making that sound the whole time.
Oh my God. Okay. I want to talk about one more football thing. Before we get on to more serious matters with Tom Lehr, cause Odell Beckham is still a free agent and is still recuperating from a torn ACL he suffered in the Super Bowl. And from, I assume, just being blind drunk on an airplane and making a scene that they wouldn't let him on.
That was a weird one, right?
That was weird. But he's still being courted, particularly by the Cowboys, who are so horny for him. Like, they've talked so openly about acquiring Odell that I really don't think it's going to happen now. It's just one of those things where, you know, you, the two of you, like, we always know that, like, there's only so much smoke to the fire. Like when people talk about these deals endlessly and they don't get executed, like, then they don't happen. But yeah. I just wanted to say that the Cowboys are still so hot and heavy for Odell that they were more than willing to overlook the airplane incident. And I just want to read the Jerry Jones quote about it, because he said, his overall team compatibility, his judgment, his behavior is not an issue with him. It is with many. It isn't with him. So I just thought that was, I'd love it when Jerry.
The response from everybody about that plane thing was so weird, because when I first saw it, I was like, oh, he probably took a sleeping pill because he wanted to be knocked out on the plane. And then, you know, you can be very delirious when someone tries to wake you up and like, whatever, no big deal. And so I was expecting his statement to be like, yeah, sorry guys, I took a sleeping pill and I was zooted. But then his statement was like, from his agent was like, Odell Beckham did nothing wrong. He was simply trying to rest his eyes and the combative flight attendant made an issue of the situation. He was not on any substance, like blah, blah, blah. And I was like, dude, like just say like,
yeah,
take the easy way out. Like, what the fuck are you doing? And then Jerry Jones is doing that too. Like, I don't know. He needs like better PR people. Cause if any of them had any idea what they're doing, like, yeah, say you took an Ambien because you wanted to sleep on the flight, like no big deal. But they were like, no, he was stone cold sober, totally awake. The flight attendant was just causing a problem. It's like, well, clearly not.
I love that. That is such a classic bit of like, also, I guess if you're like Odell Beckham's attorney, you've gotten to spend some time on TV, but you have to be thinking at some level, like, this is my time to shine. Like, this is like, it's star time. And so like the answer to that question, very obviously, it's like, you don't need to be like, he was thinking about football so hard that he was unresponsive when contacted by flight staff because he wants to win that much.
Yeah.
Like you could be normal for like 10 seconds and this isn't a problem.
There is a money turn of phrase from that attorney who said that, who blamed the incident on, and this is from the article, it was, quote, an overzealous flight attendant, which is true.
Like, my opinion is that flight attendants can do whatever the fuck they want because their job, they have nightmare jobs. Like, you deal with so many awful people on a flight every day. So, honestly, even if Odell Beckham was just, like, a little sleepy and was, like, kind of rude, fine, fuck it. Like, I'm on the flight attendant side. You can be as shitty as you want.
Yeah, like, do you have any idea how many, like, evil drunks they've already encountered, like even on morning flights?
Yeah.
Like just somebody, like the worst realtor in some town had five drinks and got on a plane with that person.
Like they're
just yelled at them the entire
their time. Job is literally being sealed inside of a tin can with no escape with the most chaotic and evil drunk people on earth for 5 hours at a time. Like there's tough. You can't feel more sympathy for anybody.
Yeah, you have to extend the benefit of the doubt in that scenario, because I feel like, as with a lot of these things, like I always feel this way when you see like chuds talking about teachers and they're like, yeah, they're trying to indoctrinate our kids. And it's like, no, man, they're in a room with like fucking 25, 70 years. Would you trade places with them?
Yeah.
Do you think that you'd do better? This is fucking Christ. It's embarrassing.
And also, you know, also there's also the pandemic when they had to deal with like,
oh yeah, non-mask
guys. You never knew when one passenger was going to be like, Attica, because they just wanted to fuck.
Yeah,
because they were like, please put your mask over your nose, like make sure it's
Like, are you willing? Can you inconvenience yourself for 75 minutes? Can you do that? And everybody's absolutely not. Yeah, no, I'm an American.
Just some white asshole in first class being like, this is worse than slavery. Just like, chill the fuck out. Like,
buddy.
Tom, we are having you on because... well, we want to talk about sports because we're a sports website.
We're talking sports. The sports guys.
We didn't want to talk about the website itself, which is Defector. And this will post by the time the calendar is turned to December, which means we will have completed, we already have completed 2 years of our existence. Mm-hmm. Are we solvent? We're okay, right?
Right, yes. The state of our union is strong.
So do I have to come in tomorrow?
Yes.
All right, I will.
You do.
All right, good.
We're solvent. We got money in the bank, baby. We're sending payroll out. you know, paying freelancers, putting stuff on site. So yeah, we are not going out of business anytime soon, it seems. And you know, what more can you ask for in this day and age than staying in business?
Honestly, it's true. Like I, and I've told Roth this privately, that I sometimes, you know, like when we started the website, we were all very excited and all that stuff. And that settled into being a regular job because that's what we wanted, right? We wanted to have jobs and we made jobs for ourselves. And so sometimes I take for granted, and this sounds very grandiose, but I take for granted what we've managed to accomplish. And then like, I'll get stoned on a Friday night and I'll be like, this fucking aw. And then I'll type in Slack and be like, I love you guys. And then like, someone will be like, I can't find Taylor Swift tickets. Like, no, you're missing the point, man.
No, I feel the same way. Like I will, now that like, you're right, it is a job now and we're, you know, more than 2 years into this now. So I will find myself, you know, on like a Tuesday night being like, fucking got to do my stupid fucking ass job tomorrow. I gotta get up, go to goddamn work. Like this is fucking stupid. Why does anybody do this? And then like, I think about it for like 5 minutes and I'm like, well, okay, it's pretty nice. Like, I guess I got a pretty good deal going on here.
That is the absolute state of my, I mean, that's the way it has been everywhere that I've ever, like, I've been lucky, you know, like I got staff jobs even before we like created our own, like an actual workplace that it's the first time I've really been in a workplace that was functional where I wasn't worried about getting laid off because some guy three floors above me got bored and was like, yeah, I think we're like, it's going to be skateboarding videos now. Sorry, you are fired. That like, and yet there's still the part of me that just any job I'm going to be kind of resentful.
I think that's healthy though. I think it's good to understand that like jobs are still jobs. Like, you know, even passion projects like this, like, you know, I think it's good for your work-life balance to at least a little bit be like, I don't fucking wake up tomorrow. I'm going to stupid ass work. But
yeah, it would be weirder if somehow like what happened, like whatever, you lift the vampire's curse of sometimes being in the bathroom at the same time as Jim Spanfeller and all of us discover that we have a completely untroubled relationship with working for money. Yeah. Like as soon as he's not there, we're just showing up every day and joining hands and hopping in a circle.
Yeah.
Well, that's just it. I'm so used to working for dysfunctional conglomerates that when I finally work for one that like works the way it's supposed to, I can't accept that. So like my brain is like, I should find something to be dissatisfied.
No, yeah, I do that
and
too.
I'm not happy.
Yeah, I definitely do that. Where and then I'm like, why am I fucking worrying about it? Like, I don't care. Like, whatever. Relax.
I think I've talked to you both about this, but this was a weird, you know, like I have my ups and downs mood wise, just because that's how my brain works. But I noticed, I think a little before the second year anniversary of Defector, that it was like somewhere in that like 18-month period that I started experiencing, like, I wasn't sleeping well. I was anxious, kind of grumpy, whatever. And I think that it was my body, after all of these different staff jobs that I've had, all of which I've had for roughly the same period of time, which was like a year and a half plus 1 month. That's how long it takes to get cycled out of a gig when your owner gets bored. That I think that I was having like a sympathetic reaction to it, like the way that you might struggle waking up in the morning after daylight savings time.
Yeah. Right.
That like something in my body was just kind of like, time for you to get fucking fired. And that's not right. So that was like coming out of that and then just again having to be like, yeah, I guess I'm going back to work was, you know, beyond like there was no bittersweet element to it. It was just funny that I've evolved to get upset. And that's on that.
This is going to sound really dumb because it was one of the worst movies released recently. But I was thinking about this when I watched that awful Sopranos prequel, Many Saints of Newark. The only part that I liked, very bad movie, but the only part I liked about it was Ray Liotta's prison, the guy who's in prison, who's just like a former mobster who's just like Zen and into Buddhism. And he's just like, yeah, I just don't want stuff. Like, I'm really happy here in prison because I just like, I don't want anything. And I try to be like Ray Liotta in prison sometimes where I'm just like, yeah, this is fine. You don't have to want too much more than this. Like, you know.
So Ray Liotta says Buddhist shit in that movie.
He
plays twin brothers in that fucking
movie. The Ninefold Path, Karen.
Yeah, he plays twin brothers in that movie. One of them's a psycho, one of them's cool. The psycho one like dies early. And then Ray Liotta's back playing his twin brother. And he does, it's pretty good. You know, he delivers a very good line. It's the wanting that gets you. It's the wanting. And you just got to let go of that. And you'll be a very high performing gangster in New Jersey, or B, a very satisfied and happy sports blogger.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. If only I had known that enlightenment was as simple as...
Yeah, you should check that movie out when you were feeling
that
bad.
Desire is poison. Yeah.
It's amazing how quickly that movie just got immediately wiped off the cultural radar, even though it was a Sopranos movie. Like, it was that much of a fucking mess that people were like, no.
I really couldn't believe how bad it was. I waited like a year to watch it because I was like, well, everybody said this is bad. So I finally did. I was like, it can't be that bad, right? Terrible, terrible movie.
By the way, I may as well plug now that we have opened up the gift subscription offer once again. So you go, if you go to defector.com/holiday-gift, you can give away a gift subscription for a year to a friend or a family member, and you get a free beanie because we had a bunch of beanies left over from last year, and we were like, well, we can't burn them, so you get one.
Yeah, we have beanies sitting in, just imagine them sitting in my garage and causing me great shame every time I see them, and that'll encourage you to buy one.
If you don't want a hat and you do a gift subscription, send me an email and I'll send you some baseball cards or something.
Or a hat.
Tom, do you all remember a guy?
Yes.
Well, good, because in honor of your Broncos fandom that doesn't actually exist, I picked in advance. I picked Maurice Clarett because not to mock Maurice Clarett, because he's been through enough already. He was profiled on ESPN for College Game Day a week ago about his time in prison and about an Ohio prison program for rehabilitation. And he's gone back to campus and he's this amazing story. Back when he was playing, back when he wanted to. He was a great running back at Ohio State. He wanted to come out after his sophomore year. The NFL said no, and the Take Industrial Complex was like, who does this young man think he is? And then he got arrested with a hatchet in his fucking car after he got drafted by the Broncos. People were like, see, we told you he wasn't a good citizen. And then he went to jail. And we're at a spot now where we can look back and be like, we treated this person like shit. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's a good guy to remember. I remember being, someone who never really followed college football much, Clarett was one of those guys who penetrated the veil for me. And I was very struck by him as a player when he was at Ohio State. I was like, this guy,
he was good,
fucking rules. And I was actually down to watch an entire game that he was in. And then did he ever have a good run with the Broncos? I feel like I remember there was some 4-week spell where it was there's the old Maurice Clarett.
I don't know that he ever even got in a game.
Did he not?
So the story was that he had a drinking problem by the time he made it, because he missed a whole year.
Right.
That he played that sophomore year and was, as you remembered correctly, I mean, that's how I remember it anyway, looked like an NFL player playing against college players, and then sat. And I think that it was during that, so when the Broncos drafted him, they drafted him in the third round. I know this, by the way, not to brag, because I have a Maurice Clarett card sitting by my desk that I worked on. I think it's the only football card he ever got, the Bowman set that I wrote a bunch of cards in when I was working there. So picked him in the third round, which was a classic Broncos move in the same way that drafting Tebow was, where they were just they'll take a chance on a guy that they think is great a little bit higher than other teams will. They're just not necessarily correct about it. So I don't know that maybe one of you has looked it up.
Yeah, I think you're right. I don't think he's a filibuster.
I looked it up and because I was going to say, well, actually, Tom, I think he was okay with the Broncos for a little bit before he got arrested and was out of the league. But no, he never played a down of football in the National Football League.
I was probably just thinking of when I would get him on my Madden team, and I'd be like, Maurice Clarett is back, baby, playing for the Broncos.
Also, was he was he in the, do you remember a guy who was a quarterback for Ohio State? He got drafted, he became a wideout, but Roger Goodell suspended him for five games.
It was Pryor.
Terrell Pryor.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember if Goodell had suspended Clarett for the same sort of deal. He hasn't actually done that since Terrell Pryor, but you never know when Rogers going to be I feel like doing that again.
Yeah, wasn't Terrell Pryor it was the tattoos or something?
It was he got free tattoo.
Ridiculous.
It ended for Jim Tressel's job.
Traded an autographed helmet for a tattoo, which we can assume, given that it was a college student getting the tattoo, that it was Jesus Christ carrying a football And then there's like a speech bubble coming out of his mouth being like, good luck, Terrell.
Yeah.
Like just bad decisions on Go-Go.
I will say,
that wrecked everything.
It is nice to sort of remember something like that and kind of feel like that's all ancient history. Like, I just don't think that happens anymore these days. Like, just due to general sentiment and NIL stuff happening, which, you know, whatever. There's still a lot of problems with college sports, but like, it is nice to think that, I hope that like, that wouldn't happen now.
Yeah.
Like,
as scuzzy as the NIL stuff can be,
yeah.
I feel like
it's great. Hugh Freeze got a job at Auburn. The system works. It's
yeah.
Great.
The system works.
Yeah. Well, it was funny. I was reading, so I've been trying to write about that. I was reading like some pretty straight coverage of it, like from like USA Today, where they were like, Hugh Freeze was great at paying players before you were like allowed to do that. So you got to assume that the NIL thing is going to really suit it.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's not wrong. It's just kind of a funny way of seeing
yeah.
it.
It's also, you know, if you're leaving out the part where he was at a high school and like forced girls to take their shirts off in front of them and shit yeah. like that, you should be mentioning that. Like,
yeah.
That's kind of important. Yeah. Eric writes in, this is time for the fun bag. This is from Yuri. He writes in, Tom, if you had to live the same calendar day every day for the rest of your life, is there a particular one you would choose? Your actions would carry forward. So it's not a Groundhog Day experience. It's just living another April 25th or another Christmas.
Oh.
So what day do you pick on the calendar to live over and over again, knowing that you're going to live it again?
I feel like you need to like consult the Farmer's Almanac or something and figure out, you know, like what yeah. date has the best chance of like being 75 degrees and not rainy. And this is like, if I travel anywhere, like it's the same day. It's the same day anywhere I am.
Yeah. Let's say that. Yeah.
I guess I would go with like sometime in April, I suppose. April seems pretty safe. It gets rainy, but it's not going to be too
April
hot.
Nice enough up there, or does it have some, yeah. still have some March leftovers?
No, it's okay. It's nice enough up here. Maybe I'll push it to May. Yeah. Let's do like May 25th. That's what I'll do.
Yeah. I'm a late August, early September guy there. Mm. I feel like you're just going to hopefully not be dealing with too much of the extremes of weather one way or the other. And early September, especially like around Labor Day, but like before Labor Day, everybody's just sort of fucking off.
Yeah.
Like it's just things are sort of happening in the world. Like baseball's starting to get interesting, but it's not stressful yet. There's not a whole lot else going on. What I want is a period where everybody has sort of tacitly agreed that it's not an important time to be alone one way or the other. And it's just sort of proceeding accordingly.
I feel like May, get a little bit out of it in May. Like people are just sort of waiting for summer to start. Schools are ending.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, fuck this.
Yeah.
May is a great time to be a kid as well too. Cause you're kind of like, it's starting to get nice. You can see the end of the school year from there, but it's not, you know, there's nothing to get stressed out about. You're in that, like, it's what I'm describing where you're basically sort of on a glide path towards, eventually.
And you're not yet panicking about like, oh, I'm wasting my summer. Like you're just like, yeah, it's May. Whatever.
Yeah.
Everything's fine right now.
You're thinking about all the sick bike rides you're going to go on during the summer instead of regretting the ones you did.
Neither of you picked like, oh, my birthday.
No.
Like, oh, it could be my birthday every day. Woohoo!
My birthday is in February and it's my wife and I have this. Well, we have a couple problems. One of which is being that our taste in restaurants is like obnoxiously bougie and probably antique at this point.
Yeah, it's all right.
Where we want to go to places where it's like seasonal food prepared in cool ways. And her birthday's in January and mine's in February. So we go to these restaurants and they're just like a roulade of turnips. Like this is, nothing is growing. The earth is frozen.
You get a winter salad. It's just like potatoes, some carrots, some walnuts in there.
So good. Wow. Is this celery root? Is it all celery root? Interesting. Cool.
I'll pick a day in May because like anything that it's all entirely weather-based. So like I won't pick October, but if I can pick a day that is as close to like just living in Los Angeles, like weather, like that's fine. Like I already know that I could do that year round. Like if I lived in fall year round, I'd be like, okay, I think I want to like go jump in a pool and I can't do that. So I don't know. Brandon Nix and Chantel Holder are our producers. Nora Ritchie is our executive producer. Our theme song is by Kirk Hamilton. You can listen to ad-free episodes of The Distraction only on Stitcher Premium. Thanks to Roth and Tom and me, you can get 3 months of Stitcher Premium right now. Just go to stitcherpremium.com and use the promo code DISTRACT right now. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe wherever it is that you listen. And again, it's defector.com/holiday-gift if you want to give a gift subscription to someone. Or just go to defector.com. yourself if you want to subscribe. And we will see you guys next week. Thank you for coming on, Tom.
Thank you for having me.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
See ya.